dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic, dynamic voices for a diverse church powered by The Witness, a Black Christian collective. I'm your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter at Burns23.
Follow at your own risk.
And joining me as always is the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Blue Check Verify himself, the president of the Wakanda International Exchange, Jamar Tisby. What's up, bro?
Brother, Tyler, just
long
give me
live
a
the king,
minute.
Bro. Long live the king.
Bro, just give me a minute to take that in. We just saw the Black Panther movie. I just saw it for the first time. Yeah. You for the second
time. Got that glow.
Oh, yeah.
You're really speechless. You're like pacing back and forth. You're sweating.
Yo, I'm saying. I literally speechless. When we came out of the theater and we were just waiting for folks to gather so we could come over to the venue, I was just wandering around, man.
I could tell. I couldn't find you.
I was still in Wakanda. So it was just that powerful. And I'll say it like this. I have been emotional watching many movies about the tragedy of the Black experience. I have never been this emotional watching a movie about the joy and triumph of the Black experience.
You gotta wait. We gotta introduce the audience and all that. What, man? Come on.
Look, I'm telling you. You asked me how I can't. I'm gonna try to. Okay, I'm gonna shift it back.
Okay,
down.
Let's pause and tell people we are at the first stop of the PTM Live Tour.
There you go.
In my hood, my city,
Pensacola,
Florida.
You should have done all that before you talked to me.
Listen. I was trusting that you was going to pass it back to me.
You know that, bro. You know you can't do it after this
and
movie.
And the laughs that you hear, the reaction you hear are from our live audience. Can we give it up for
the live audience
yourselves? And I want to shout out my church, New Dimensions Christian Center, for allowing us to be here. And also Miss Darby Meads for doing a phenomenal job on the catering. Y'all like that food?
Them sirloin tips. Mm.
So we just saw Black Panther. What did y'all think about Black Panther? Audible reactions. Crazy. So, Jamar, let me ask you this. Was this what you were expecting? Was it not what you were expecting? In what ways did it meet or surpass your expectations?
I mean, we really don't have a category for this kind of a movie, right? Like, it's not just depicting Black people in a positive manner. It's creating an entire nation with its own history, its own mythology, its own culture, and all of these things. And so, I mean, like, was it what I expected? It was way beyond, you know, way better. But at the same time, there's hardly a basis for comparison. Not that there haven't been other Black superheroes or things like this, but on this scale, with this kind of backing, with this kind of popularity and advertising and hype, and it lived up to everything people said. My goodness.
Yeah, and so leading up to the film, there was kind of this questioning about why was Black Panther this important to people? Because there have been other Black superheroes. We can go all the way back to Meteor Man, actually. Mm-hmm. We can go to Blade, which started kind of this run of comic superheroes and people who were going to come on the big screen. We can talk about Storm. Luke Cage was obviously represented on Netflix. And we have Black Lightning on CW. There's a lot of different Black superheroes that we've seen, but this was unique in the sense that it created an entire nation. It created a fictional place where Black people and people of the diaspora were able to express themselves fully without any colonization. So that's the unique thing about Wakanda, is that it hasn't been colonized. It hasn't been, you know, taken captive by any sort of outside forces. No country has come in and taken it over. And so it stands unique as kind of this opportunity. And so there's this idea that Wakanda is this beautiful place. And we thought it. And if you've read the comics, if you follow Black Panther, then you know that it's a beautiful place visually on the page. But no one had brought it to life on screen. And so they took $200 million and poured it into just this amazing film. So what did you like the most about the movie?
I don't know, but I'll tell you my impression.
No, you got to answer the question.
No,
you
I'll tell you my impression, because everything you're talking about is just it's going to lead somewhere. When they first entered in the ship, this advanced hovercraft ship, and T'Challa says this never gets old, and they break the illusion and
you
get
cry.
Into Wakanda.
You cry.
Yes, I teared up, bro.
I did too.
I teared up, and this is in like the first 7 minutes of the movie or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Why did you cry?
Because as if for a brief moment, I got back everything that had been stolen from me. You know what I mean? I'm talking about a nation, an identity, a history, a dignity,
technology.
And when you pass through that veil, yeah. All right.
Watch out.
When you pass through that veil,
watch out, dog.
You boys, okay?
Hey, we in the church. Watch out, dog.
When you pass through that veil and you see your nation,
yeah,
as it was meant to be,
in all its splendor,
it does something to you. It does something to you. So that's what it was.
So I think the reason why Wakanda has always been so special to me is because it takes the premise of our current experience in our context culturally in America and says, what would we be if not for slavery, if not for segregation, if not for dehumanization? What would we be without that legacy? And I think that's appealing to a lot of people. But I think this movie does something very interesting by really not even thinking about that, in the sense that there are no references to any other superheroes in this film until the very end. Did you guys notice that? No references. In most Marvel films, they'll point to something outside of that particular standalone superhero movie. So they'll point to the big event. You know, you see it even on Netflix in the TV shows. They point to the big event. They point to other superheroes. They point to that big green guy, Hulk. But they did none of that here. 99% of the references were set in Wakanda, and about what Wakanda should do for the outside world, but it doesn't even acknowledge anyone else. So see, sometimes I feel like what we do in these types of environments is we write things intentionally as a response, which is what Black Panther was written as. But the movie takes a different approach and says, we can do an entire movie, make it beautiful, and not really reference anyone else who would come in and impose themselves. So it's almost as if not only is T'Challa the superhero of Wakanda, in their universe, he's the only superhero.
Mm.
He's it. That's it. There's nobody else. It's just T'Challa.
I'm curious, and maybe other people are too. You said in the comics, or the genesis of the comic books was a little bit as a response. What can you flesh that out and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Black Panther was started by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, and I'm looking over at Bo to make sure. I'm going to watch him for approval to get that nod to make sure I get everything right. So
Resident
it started
Geek,
by
yes.
Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, and the funny thing is Black Panther was started 3 months before the Black Panther Party. I mean, this crazy act of coincidence. It was started 3 months before the Black Panther Party ever came into existence. And so because of that, they changed the name at one point. He was going as Black Leopard. And then there was even this debate about whether or not he should show any of his face. So for marketability purposes, what they did was they said, we're going to have our comic artists draw a full mask. But Jack Kirby, in response to that, would always draw half the mask to show his face because he wanted half a mask, half face. And then he would say the other artist would have to draw it in. It was kind of his act of protest.
Wow.
And so it was written directly in response for the idea of representation for a group of people that was set in a completely different way. So the origin stories of Black superheroes were different. They were based upon crime or based upon a negative background or based upon growing up in the rough part of town, whatever the stereotypes are. And this was a completely separate, altogether idea. So it was written kind of in response to that. But then the movie takes it and just completely flips it and says, let's take you into an internal conversation between Black Americans and African immigrants.
Right.
And let's take you into a completely different conversation about those who have and those who do not have and what the responsibility is for the people who share the same skin tone who have to those who don't. And so it's just this really interesting subversion that I think is genius on the part of Ryan Coogler to not make this, to make the implicit presence of the movie the statement, rather than saying, hey, well, let's go and lecture Captain America about what he could have done and let's go lecture this guy. No, Captain America uses the vibranium shield. And if he needs another one, we'll get him one. But I mean, you know, as of right now, he doesn't exist. It's just so fascinating that none of the other, they don't reference any of the Avengers. They don't reference Civil War. They do at the beginning. They're like, the guy's been apprehended. And Child's like, all right, I'm going to go now.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Like, what?
And it's, so it's this nation and a people, which are usually on the margins and the periphery, brought to the center.
And they're even seen as on the margins because yes. people don't know what they're capable of.
Right, exactly.
They don't know what they're capable of. Hiding underneath the surface of the primitive presentation. The primitive presentation. Right, okay, I'm right, looking at y'all. Right. is something beautiful. And it's something altogether unique. And it's something that the world needs.
Yes. And what was, I think, part of what is such an experience about this film is the focus on the African diaspora, right?
Sure.
So it's not just based in the United States. It's not based in the United States hardly at all, except right. for some scenes, right? And so it pulls you to another continent. It pulls you to another country, but it also connects them. Mm. And at one point, Killmonger says, didn't all life come from Africa?
Okay, we gotta, wait for Killmonger.
Okay, we're not going.
I'm just talking about
the unity of the African diaspora.
But I'm just saying,
right?
hang on, bro. Wait for the Killmonger.
And so that was one of the things, because it pulls us Americans outside of our experience.
Hmm.
It pulls us outside of the stereotype of Black people in America.
And of Africans too.
And of Africans, absolutely. And so, so that was one of the things, and that's tough to pull off.
So let's talk about why that's able to be pulled off, and it's because of the cast.
Yes.
So the cast was absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And sure, someone actually made this point, and I think it was Ta-Nehisi. Ta-Nehisi made this point, and I paused when he said it, and I was like, nah. He said, you know, this is the most talent Marvel's ever compiled. And I was like, nah. So I think maybe the only on paper comparison would be Doctor Strange, because Doctor Strange has a lot of people with awards. But if we take the depth of the cast, I mean, Angela Bassett was just like, she barely got screen time. Forest Whitaker died, spoiler. they killed off Michael B. Jordan.
They killed more
allegedly.
Talent than a lot of have in the whole cast. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so the cast displays that diversity, but the cast kind of seems to come together in a way to display each a different type of complexity.
Yes.
Each a different type of narrative. Who's your favorite character? I'm gonna make you pick.
Little sister.
Shuri. Okay.
Shuri. She stole every scene she was in. It was amazing.
Iron Man. Yeah.
I'm down. Yes. I'm gonna get the t-shirt and everything. Yes.
What did you like the most about her character?
She was the little sister, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course it's too tight. Can we get this over with? Yeah, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
She has some sass and whatnot. But she was a scholar. She is a serious scientist, right? Mm-hmm. A genius. And she was down for the struggle.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
She was there. She was always there, but she was her own woman, like all the women in the cast, right?
Ooh,
but I just
women
thought
in
there
this
was,
cast, bro.
I mean, look, I was telling Elodie that, you know, aside from sort of the representation.
Elodie, you part of the Dora Milaje? You part of the Dora Milaje on the slide?
You know?
Okay.
You know, aside from the general representation, women were the movie.
Yeah.
And that was a beautiful thing to see.
You know what I really like about this movie is that T'Challa is the main character, but it's not about the man. It's about the people. And I feel like T'Challa was the thing that kept the movie going, but he was not the thing that everything was about. So it wasn't really revolving. Everyone had a complex arc. So I got to talk about Danai Gurira's character. I believe her name is Okoye. She was phenomenal. The leader of the Dora Milaje.
My goodness.
Filled with principle, filled with complexity, nuance, love, strength, fury. And then, of course, I'm going to pick another character because we're going to talk about Killmonger. He would be number two, but I'd say M'Baku, definitely.
Wow.
Leader of the Jabari tribe.
That was awesome.
He was hilarious. He was funny. But then he was also very strong. He doesn't seem in awe of T'Challa. And everyone else seems in awe of him in some way, shape, or form. Even Michael B. Jordan, even Killmonger seems in awe of what T'Challa has.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's in, I want what you have. But M'Baku's like, man, I have something outside of that. And even though I challenge you, you know, it's fine. I'll help you. And then when you ask me for more help, I say no. But then I'll end up helping you.
It was an incredible act of strength and humility when they had
to reject the heart-shaped herb.
All right. And give it to the king that was clinging to life.
So let's talk about this. two Euro characters. Only two. Martin Freeman plays Agent Ross. And then Andy Serkis does a phenomenal job playing Claw. Yeah. Like, just off his rocket. How do you feel like they treated non-black characters in the movie? I was curious because, you know, it's 98%, it's 95%, it's 90%. How do you feel like they treated non-black characters in the movie?
I think it was summed up when they were in M'Baku's throne room.
Now, it's not Christian for y'all to do that. I know some of y'all are thinking. Some of y'all are thinking.
It's a movie. Yeah, it's a movie.
Next time someone comes to collect a bill, you're like, oh, oh, oh. Nah, don't be doing that. That's not the way of Christ.
But it was part of the reversal, right? Where usually in any movie or even in real life, no matter how small the number, the white people in the room are dictating what's happening. Not here, not in Wakanda. And they weren't, if you think about it from a macro level, I mean, he didn't have the rights of a Wakandan.
Right.
But they saved his life, right?
Absolutely.
They were taking care of him. They let him be part of that. They let him into their secret world. But
then you want to come and tell us what you go.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. You know what
it's
I'm saying?
Very interesting.
So what do I think of how they treat it? I think it was fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair in their world.
Yeah.
Fair in our world too.
If you want to come into a black space, yeah.
Build on that.
All right. So it's not disrespectful. I think it's humility. You are coming into somebody else's culture, somebody else's tradition, and they're letting you in, right?
Right.
At great risk.
Absolutely.
Let's not miss the risk. Here, okay, because in the movie he was a CIA agent. He could have reported anything he wanted to that they didn't necessarily want him to report. So they were taking a risk by letting him in. And he was used to just kind of, you know, saying what he wanted to say.
He was used to
dictating,
like, you know, setting the lineup for the conference.
Yes.
He was used to doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. And so we let him in and then he takes
over
the lineup. Okay.
Right.
That's
interesting.
That's interesting, Jamal. I'm just going to throw that out there. We'll leave it. We'll let people expound
on it
in the second
segment.
But look,
at the end of the day, they even trusted him with a critical task.
They did. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it was disrespectful at all. I think it's what minorities often have to do in general is go into a space that they don't have control over and sort of basically wait for the people in charge to give them permission to do X, Y, Z, but that's in an unjust manner. I don't think this was in an unjust manner.
Okay, but this leads us to Killmonger, all right? Hashtag Killmonger had a point. So I've been telling y'all from day one, I just want to say this.
Yes,
okay.
He's been riding hard for Killmonger.
I've been telling y'all at every live podcast, I've said, look, man, Killmonger, if they do it right, it's going to be very interesting to see how people perceive it. It's going to be very interesting to see how people take his political persuasion. And I think Killmonger is a representation of, you know, someone said Killmonger is a hotep. a shout out to Bradford. Bradford said Killmonger is a hotep. So I just laughed when he said that. But then I'm kind of thinking, yeah, that's kind of true, right? I mean, you know, Killmonger would be the guy, like, you know, in your inbox, you know, leaving you messages and things like that. But I think Killmonger as a character was very deftly handled, because I think they showed an internal conversation of, in the civil rights movement, it was redemptive nonviolence and tactical nonviolence, two like completely different things. In the sense of redemptive nonviolence seeks to redeem and move the hearts and minds of the people, and tactical nonviolence was seen as this, we don't care if hearts and minds are changed. We just want to do whatever it takes to get the law changed. Both were nonviolent. But in this case, he used whatever he could. I'll tell you, that scene where he is in the throne room with T'Challa is one of my favorite Marvel scenes ever.
Why is that?
Because it seemed like in the moment he kept asking them, ask me who I am. He kept telling them, ask me who I am. Ask me who I am. And when he said it, I felt like he had been holding that in for his entire life.
Yeah.
To finally declare, this is who I am, and you can't turn away from me.
I'm one of you.
I'm one of you. And that was kind of the pinnacle of his life, because he was able to finally assert his identity and finally able to say who he was. So Killmonger critiques Wakanda. Would you agree with Killmonger's critique?
In 2018, yes. The question that makes it complicated for me is, would Wakanda have been Wakanda if that had been the philosophy from the jump? You know what I mean? Would they have built the society they built with the confidence and the swag and the tech that they had if they had had those permeable boundaries from the jump? And so I think in 2018, you've got to recognize that the ground has shifted. Worldwide, globally, and in Wakanda, with the shift of a king and everything like that, to where that's a very salient conversation. But I think it would be simplistic of us to say, well, all the kings should have been helping out all the time and could have prevented all of these disasters that happened to African people.
Yeah, like someone told me this recently, Octavius Newman. Want to shout him out for this, because he was talking. He said, "Man, you know, if Wakanda existed now." If we found out Wakanda existed, we would be upset. We'd be like, y'all had all this, and we were sitting over here, and we just had through slavery, we just had through Jim Crow, and y'all not, what? Like, he was like, man, come on. Like, I would be upset. Now, at first, I was like, nah, I mean, I would be upset. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, if we're good, let's move to Wakanda. Nah, man, we'd be upset with Wakanda. And so I think it's a question, though. Is do the people who have a responsibility to those who don't?
I think it's even trickier than that. What Good. Level of responsibility, right? So he says, I'm the king of Wakanda, not the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and then it's easy to say, well, people are suffering, people help. But the reason why it's hard in the real world is because there are trade-offs, right? There are trade-offs. If they had, and I'm not arguing that they should not, that they should have been closer, that the history of their nation should have gone as it did. I'm just saying it's too easy as a newcomer to Wakanda to say y'all should have done it this way, XYZ way, right? Now that being said, I would have been ticked too. I would have been real mad. And I would have been asking for, where's my share?
Do you think that there's going to be an ongoing conversation about this, or is the movie? I think this is an ongoing conversation, because I think the way that Killmonger went out, and an important thing is Killmonger dies a few times in the comics, but he is revived. So I don't think they're done with that character, but it's important to kind of see, especially with the setting of Infinity War in the next movie, how they take that conversation. Let me talk to you about a couple of more things before we wrap up this segment. But how did you feel about the costumes? I thought the costumes
were
phenomenal. You know, I didn't notice this, why we see it multiple times, but T'Challa has some shorts on when he was in that challenge. The first challenge, he has some purple and black shorts with the gold. But woo, bro, I was like, yo. And then that jacket in South Korea, jacket that he had. I was like, I looked at my dad. I was like, yo, I need that jacket. I know you know somebody that got that jacket.
The trench coat type. He had, he was walking back into the throne with the
kente cloth.
Yes. He wore that sucker out. I was like, okay. He wore it better than Neo.
Look, bro. you wrong for that. But the costumes were phenomenal. I think I was very concerned about how they were going to portray this side of African culture. I was very concerned, but I think they brought in the right people, and the way that they dressed, even Michael B. Jordan's character, and especially Vidor Milaje, everyone, it was just dignifying and regal, because this is a very, it has a lot of theater to it. It's a movie that's very heavy. It felt like a play more than anything else. It was very strategic in how they presented things. And then let's talk about the music, man.
Oh, man.
The music, man, sets the mood. They take, it seems, in this movie and represent all the best of Black culture from a fashion standpoint, from a musical standpoint, from the internal conversations, acting, action, physicality, intimacy. All these things are portrayed within this film. So how'd you feel about the music?
I've been listening to the soundtrack nonstop since it came out. And I think it's just like you said. I mean, it's a wonderful assemblage of talent, but it's also a blend that feels African, but it also feels hip hop. You know,
and that's Michael B. Jordan. They gave Michael B. Jordan some good
some bangers,
brothers, man. I'm telling you.
So it went well. I mean, it all flowed together. The aesthetic of the movie was just seamless, from the clothing to the language to the font that they used, right?
And even how they went back and forth from their language. I love
that. Right,
like
right.
We can speak in our native tongue, or we cannot.
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
They code switched.
And they can speak Korean. Yeah, you know,
and then so she's looking like, okay, I see you because I know what you said. I can't let you know I know what you said. I love that.
But then I also loved, and this is, I think, all part of it, it's just one fabric, it's one whole, the honoring of the ancestors, right? Like, it was such a strong tradition of knowing who you are because of where you came from, right?
Sankofa, yeah, Sankofa.
You know? And so that was just a beautiful thing, especially in a North American context where maybe we can go back 2-3 generations, but we can't go all the way, you know, a lot of us.
So let's end with this. What didn't you like?
What we not finna do in 2018 is say anything bad about Black Panther.
What do you think could have been improved upon?
Okay, so I think...
Or expounded upon or developed.
So there was entering into the ultimate conflict between Killmonger and T'Challa. It was very... you felt very conflicted. Like, you would go either way. You know, do you follow the tradition no matter who's on the throne? Or do you follow a person who you really admire, or an ideal that you think the current person on the throne isn't following?
A very relevant question.
But up to that point, I felt like there was genuine tension. As it progressed, though, I thought that Killmonger's character became a little too easy to dislike.
That's good, bro. That's good.
And then it was easy to take sides.
Especially for the way he treated Black women. I think that is especially the way he treated women. He seemed to save a level of brutality for women.
Right.
I think was off-putting and unsettling.
Is very unsettling.
To laugh while killing someone.
Right.
You know, to lift an elderly Black woman by her throat.
Right.
You know, it's just very, kind of some unsettling, uncomfortable imagery.
But up to the point where he actually takes the throne and then does what he does, you're like, you know, Killmonger has a point.
It's a hashtag, bro.
So I thought they could have let that complexity rest some more and carried that through the movie. What about you?
I would have loved to have heard a little bit more about, it seems like they moved on from T'Chaka's death in a way that was very weird. I think they moved on a little too quickly. I would love to hear what his mom thought a little bit more, kind of her wrestles. How do they handle grief in that society? How do they handle grief in that culture? And it seems like they moved on. It was just next man up. Wakanda's amazing. You're good. You know, we're going to do the thing, and you can, you know. And so I was kind of like, well, you know, I mean, is anybody mourning? Is there a funeral involved? Like, what is all this, you know? So I would love to see how they treated grief in that context.
That's good.
And then I also feel like Wakabi didn't have enough to work with. So we love Daniel Kaluuya because he was in Get Out. But, I mean, Wakabi didn't have enough to work with. And so he was just giving people, you know, that kind of look where he was just like, but you know, and I mean, his switch. I mean, he's grown up with T'Challa, apparently.
Yeah, that happens.
And he's like, okay, I'm a Killmonger now. You know, and I'm like, man, that's a little too easy.
Almost a civil war, you know?
Yeah, I mean, So a lot of Wakandans died for you just to sit here and feel like there was no struggle, there was no wrestle. I heard him and he had a point, and that was it.
Flips back.
You know, 100 people die, but okay, I surrender.
Lay down my sword, So
yeah, that was very interesting.
The other part I thought something I thought of that I would love to see explored is the entire movie is told from the perspective of the royalty and the elite. And so what about the rest of Wakanda?
What about the shops and everything? They're walking through the shops.
The peoples.
With the guards, they feel the same way?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Now that's true. That's true. So a lot to chew on. Listen, we're going to get some of our Pass the Mic listeners in on this next segment. We're going to get Bo in on this next segment. This was awesome. It was a great experience. You are Wakanda forever, though. Even with your critiques, you're Wakanda forever.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'm going to see it about 50 more times.
Yeah, this thing got to get, like, all the money. It's got to get all the money. So thank y'all for listening in, and we'll see you on part 2.